Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
It's the 24th of July. I'm Miles Maftian, editorial director here at Visegrad Insight. I'm sitting with Adam Yasser, our deputy managing editor, and we're bringing you the latest developments from the region, most notably Spain, obviously, Ukraine, and a couple of other developments that are happening in Poland as well. Adam, we've led this week's outlook with the Spanish elections. You know, at first glance, you think that's not really Central European news, but we had a guest appearance of some of our favorite regional leaders, right? So as we know, the extreme right-wing Spanish party Vox, they actually suffered a notable loss in the elections, and this is leading to a sort of hung parliament. Why we were so interested is that it had the endorsement of both Viktor Orban and Jarosław Kaczynski from Poland. So they were basically hoping for Vox to join their cultural revolution, as they called it. So what do you think here? What are kind of the implications of neither the right nor left-wing blocs really securing any functional majority in Spain? And what does this mean for the elections coming up?
Right, lots of interesting issues there. And you're absolutely right. Spain seems to be as far from Central Europe as it gets. However, in the past few weeks and months, actually, the Polish right and Viktor Orban have this tendency to see swallows of European uprising in every extreme right wing party in Europe. For over a year now, they've been putting their bets on Vox, doing well in the elections in Spain and also becoming part of the government, right. Which both Orban and Kaczynski had hoped would change the balance of power in the European Parliament and then overall mark a swing to the right across the EU. That swing to the right is taking place because if you look at Finland and if you look at Sweden, extreme right parties there have become part of the sort of governing coalitions, even if informally in Sweden, but formally in Finland. The caveat, of course, is that by Western European or Eastern European standards, these far-right Nordic parties remain pretty much mainstream compared to the extremists elsewhere. But nevertheless, you can observe a certain tendency. And with the AfD, Alternative für Deutschland, in Germany also gaining in opinion polls, you can see that there is a bit of a swing to the right.
That's right.
But then Spain contradicted this, and the socialist prime minister Pedro Sanchez proved to be quite skillful in calling an early election and making the best of a weak hand. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was a shot across the bow for Kaczynski and Orban. It's not the first disappointment. Mm-hmm. The really interesting thing is that they seem not to learn from their own mistakes of endorsing losing parties. It's very unusual for Polish particularly for Polish politicians, ruling politicians, to endorse anyone in an American election. Usually, every government in Poland strives to have good relationship with both sides of the political spectrum and would never comment on election campaigns. Mm-hmm. Law and Justice broke with that. They openly supported Trump in the last election. Worse, they sort of joined him in questioning the result. President Duda was late with congratulating Trump. Of course, the war in Ukraine changed the dynamic, and since then there has been a much better relationship between the Democratic administration and the Polish government. But nevertheless, this instinct to hope that there will be some kind of a revolution inside the European Union that will rebuild the power of the nation state and reduce sort of common policy, that instinct seems to be alive and kicking.
Yeah, but this development of the shift, this sort of enclosing into the center, is really seemingly something that, well, we saw it's obviously happening in Spain. And here as well, there are elements of the reversal, right? So what do we actually think in terms of the outlook for the Polish elections in this sense?
I think you put the finger on it. It's quite interesting because all the forecasts that we've got now, and I'm going to make a my favorite caveat that a week is a long time in politics.
Yeah. So and 24th of July,
we're still discussing, we're still discussing something that is going to happen in October. And as the Spanish election shows, surprises can happen within the last week of campaigning, because the socialists actually made gains in the last week in Spain. So with that caveat out of the way, we can more or less comfortably predict that it is going to be a very close race in Poland as well between the two blocks, the sort of right-wing bloc composed of the ruling Law and Justice and the far-right Confederation, which has rebranded itself as New Hope, which is a bit of a misnomer. And the sort of mainstream opposition of the Civic Coalition, which is a sort of centrist, right of center party, plus the left, plus a sort of centrist Third Way and peasants. So these two blocks, if you sort of take them as two separate blocks, very much like in Spain, it seems they're basically even. So there is a possibility that the election in Poland will produce a hung parliament.
It will be really interesting to see what happens over the next month, few months.
Yes, exactly. Well, I don't think you can draw immediate parallels in terms of how this is organized. You know, in Spain, Pedro Sanchez was already running a minority cabinet for a while, and there were early elections a few years back when they were in a similar situation. In Poland, it seems minority cabinets are not really a good solution, because governments usually then take to become hostage to different interests. So Kaczyński, for example, he has a track record of not really liking being a minority government. I doubt that Tusk would agree to be a minority leader with the Confederates, the extreme right, supporting his appointment. So we may end up with another election, possibly, in a short time. So I'm not sure that Spain's example is going to influence Poland. However, one thing seems to be clear for the moment, that neither of the main parties, that is Law and Justice and Tusk's Civic Coalition, can win outright and have a government, one party government.
But I mean, you know, the point is that peace is always semi on the defensive, right? And there were developments again this last week that we specified in the outlook that, for instance, the European Commission filed a lawsuit against Poland over the controversial ruling in the Constitutional Court. So this is something that I really don't know how all of that will play out, right? And what it precisely means for the elections, I don't think domestically it necessarily means all that much, in terms of how votes will actually be redistributed amongst society. But at the same time, it kind of shows once again that Poland is this sort of, as they say, the center of gravity, but pushing further away when it comes to the actual foundational elements of democracy in this sense, right? So I think that this is, it's again, another instance of looking and seeing that yet again, we still have this major issue that has yet to be resolved.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, because if you take everything into account, the fact that Law and Justice remains popular and is still ahead in surveys, although by a very narrow margin, reflects the fact that Poland for the past 8 years economically has been doing well, and the standard of living is good. Okay, Poland had inflation, which probably was a bit higher than it could if the central bank and the politicians and the government did the right thing at the right time to cool down the economy when it was overheating.
But looking around, it wasn't a totally distinct.
But it wasn't totally distinct. Right. And okay, real wages fell a little bit, but not
drastic.
Too much to really sour the mood.
Right.
But at the same time, it's becoming clear that lots of promises made by law and justice, particularly in areas of economic development, of, spurring some kind of industrial rebirth of Poland. Mm-hmm. But most of these promises were not met. Right. And in fact, the party, after 8 years in power, is trying to sell their electoral message as if we're coming to power and now we will do all these things right. that they had been promising for the past 8 years. And there's a dearth of new ideas there.
Yeah.
So they seem to be sort of, a little out of depth. And on top of that, there are all these little scandals and big scandals about misappropriation of state funds, neglect of certain issues, sort of oligarchic structures created by party faithful. And there is a lot of coverage of that in the media. So, and on top of that comes the fact that there is still no money from the recovery fund, from the EU recovery fund. And, you know, even pro-government economists are now beginning to sort of quietly signal that unless that money materializes in 2024, and then the economy can really stall because the previous financial perspective is going to more or less be done.
Yeah.
The economy is slowing anyway because the external environment is becoming tougher. So where's the impulse going to come from? And, you know, Poland is lagging behind on energy transition. So there are lots of things that cause law and justice uncertainty about the outcome of the election. And yes, it's up for grabs. And the opposition, for the first time, seems to be, you know, particularly Tusk, seems to be capitalizing on this. And, right. and for the first time in many, many years, it seems that law and justice is chasing the opposition rather than the other way around.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the point is that if you're a ruling party and you want to think of what your campaign will be, it's very simple. You just govern, right? That's one of the best campaign strategies Absolutely. That you can have. You govern. And I think that this is an element that, because one of the developments that we talked about was the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, that there was an escalation there with the city's bombardment in Odessa and so forth, right? And of course, this was in the news. And then you have the other element or the other side of this, which was Poland seemed to be at the center there, leading this group of other CEE nations and basically, you know, calling for extending this temporary EU ban on Ukrainian grain and so forth. So there is a whole other element of this where almost as if it's like two-faced in this sense, that internationally there are so many aspects, in particular to the conflict in Ukraine, where you see them governing, or you see them taking a stance, or you see that, you know, Poland is advocating for something bigger, not just endorsing Vox. You're endorsing Vox on one hand, and then on the other hand, you're basically calling on the EU to, you know, intervene and to help in this tragedy that's happening. And this, to me, it's incredibly interesting, but at the same time, I think, I don't really know how much this will actually affect domestically what people think about peace and whether this will change anything for votes.
Well, as we all know, you know, domestic policy usually dictates the outcomes of elections. Of course, in the current environment with the war and everything else, the security aspect and foreign policy play an oversized role. There's right. no doubt about it. You put your finger on it. You remember how in at Visegrad Insight we called it once, you know, chaotic hypocrisy.
Oh yeah, sure.
The bottom line is law and justice is full of contradictions, you know, and they don't see they seem unable to connect the dots and see that if you're pro-Ukraine, anti-Russian, you should not be blocking, for example, Ukraine's grain exports just because some farmers are angry,
right.
because then you cannot square it. You cannot square your image of a sort of top Ukraine backer with suddenly blocking Ukraine's grain exports, particularly now when Russia is bombing Odessa, making it impossible for Ukraine to export grain and causing problems in Africa. Of course, the ruling party says, well, the EU should and the Americans should do something so that we don't suffer and Africa gets grain.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's Poland that is applying a very harsh language here. You know, the Polish Prime Minister Morawiecki, who, you know, only a few months back was sort of criticizing everyone in Europe for not backing Ukraine enough, goes on television and says, unless, you know, we get our way on grain, we will unilaterally block Ukraine's access. Mm-hmm. You know, and he does it a day after Russia sort of walks away from the grain deal. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's also confusing for Poland's partners.
Yeah.
They don't really trust Poland anymore, that it will be predictable and that it will hold on to its principles.
Yeah.
And of course, Morawiecki does it because they are aware of their difficult situation ahead of the elections, and they put a lot of effort in the past 8 years to win the farm vote and pull it away from the opposition party, the farm party,
mm-hmm.
and they just don't want to lose these people, so that's why they're sort of saying these things. And also the Confederates, the extreme right, is also anti-Ukrainian in its outlook.
Sure.
So they don't want to give them fuel. But the contradiction is that in the end they may have to rule with them in a coalition later on,
yeah.
Which means that one way or the other they will be moving away from a strongly pro-Ukrainian stance to something more complicated and contradictory again.
So it's impossible to put Poland to the side because, you know, it's such a huge player here, but we have this strategic port city of Odessa and it's crucial for the Black Sea access and for grain exports. And we haven't talked specifically about this, like how this escalation impacts the regional and global geopolitics there.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that Russia is trying to sort of blackmail the West particularly, but also it seems that they want to pressure African countries to sort of press the West. And
right.
But the interesting thing is that like other moves by Moscow, they seem to be falling flat, you know.
Yeah.
Even some of the African leaders begin to be really sort of angry with Russia because they see that, you know, there was something, there was a deal, it functioned, it stopped last year's grain problems from materializing, and now Russia is playing the same card again, and it's... For everyone, it's becoming plain to see that you cannot really blame Ukraine for that. It's, yeah. It's Moscow's doing.
Right.
So the question is, you know, the question is, what Western Europe and what the Americans are going to do about it. There are some ideas being floated around about grain possibly being transported along the coast of Bulgaria and Romania, who also mm-hmm. have a Black Sea mm-hmm. coastline. But that would require some kind of NATO protection from territorial waters of these two countries, but nevertheless, and that obviously is going to be increasing the potential for some kind of an escalation.
True.
But my view is that, you know, NATO has to be prepared to escalate. The Americans must be prepared to escalate a little bit because otherwise Putin will simply get away with it.
That's true.
And it's time for decisive action on this.
So it's clear that we're witnessing really significant shifts, not only in the European political landscape, but regionally and globally. As always, we'll continue to follow these stories closely and provide our listeners with in-depth analysis and updates. Adam, thank you so much for your insights today.
No, thank you.